through this so fast, I'd like y'all to see there's a ton of information here. A lot of FYI stuff. Iraq. Head of state is, of course, Saddam Hussein, our arch enemy number one. The official name of Iraq is the Republic of Iraq. Their legal system is Islamic and civil law. Population is 20.6 million, although it's much lower now than we decided to bomb the hell out of them. It's probably a lot lower. Let's see. U.S. exports to Iraq, $200,000. We make $200,000 off Iraq every year. We're sweet. How much do we import from Iraq? Goose egg, not a thing. We don't import anything from Iraq since they're bad. Their industries mainly are oil and agriculture. A little overview on Iraq. Well, it's bounded on the east by Iran, on the north by Turkey, on the south by Kuwait, and on the Arabian Gulf. And it's on the west by Jordan and Saudi Arabia. It's kind of smack in the middle of all the Arab states, so it's a pretty important strategic location within the Middle East. The Iraqi economy, having begun to recover from the physical and human devastation caused by their war with Iran, 1980 to 88. Right, that's back when we liked Iraq. Explain that to me. Entered into a new period of trauma as a result of Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. Right, y'all remember back in like 90, they went to Kuwait and decided that, you know, democracy in Kuwait was threatened. So we had to go, you know, kick the shit out of them, right? We did that in 1990-91, I guess. Actually, it took 3 days. I just remember which 3 it was. The ensuing hostilities and the effects of the international economic sanctions have screwed their economy, y'all. I mean, they are in bad shape. Like, thousands of people are dying every month in Iraq. This is a good case on the topic. Sanctions to Iraq should be lifted. They're not solving. The effect of the 1990 sanctions was to place the Iraqi economy in almost complete isolation. And I promise you, it's not Saddam who's going without food, okay? It's not Saddam and his family who are going without medicine. None of the elites in Iraq. None of the elites in any of these countries who are going without, right? Poor people in these countries who are going without. Sanctions have a way, right? When we target a country, they in turn target the people who are most vulnerable in their country. Political structure. The structure of the Iraqi government at the national level consists of 3 branches, once again. They also have a constitution, like I said earlier, all the countries do. They're represented by a president, they have vice presidents, they have a chairman, they have a vice chairman of revolutionary command, they have a prime minister, deputy prime minister, they have all sorts of people. In October 1995, last time Saddam was elected, he won 99.89% of the votes in a national referendum on whether should he remain president. This wasn't like an election where it's like I'm running against, you know, my brother, you know, Joe Hussein. It's more like it's a national referendum on whether or not I should stay in power, and most people didn't want to vote against him. The legislative body of Iraq is the National Assembly. It's a 250-member unicameral assembly directly elected by 56 constituencies. They're nominally responsible for the legislative process, and they follow the directions of the RCC, right? That's the Revolutionary Command Chairman, Council, okay? Let's do a little economic review real quick. Well, basically they're screwed. That's my lecture on their economy. They're in bad shape, okay? They used to do pretty good, and we like them. Now that we don't like them, we have a really good ability to really, you know, just devastate a country when we don't like it without ever dropping a bomb on them. Although we've got to do both in Iraq. Thank you for enough. We're all going to bomb the hell out of them. The Iraqi invasion of Kuwait in 1990 and the subsequent war to remove Iraq from Kuwait, and sanctions, while dealt the economy with just a huge open thing blow, like I said, unable to export nearly any of its oil, Iraq lost considerable revenue. Now, oil was this for Iraq, right? Some agriculture, but let's be honest, they live in a desert, right? There's more oil than food there most of the time. And so the effect of the embargo, it led to a siege economy, right? Rationing, shortages, inability to just get the basic necessities for life occurred. What we did is we offered them, we're so benevolent, we offered them oil for food. Give us some of your oil and we'll give you some food. So they're like, okay, we'll do that. This was Security Council Resolution 986, and it was to permit Iraq to sell $2 billion of oil and oil products. The money we put in escrow account and paid in order to pay for food and medicine that supposedly Saddam couldn't touch. In September 96, this deal was put on hold indefinitely due to their involvement, the involvement of Saddam's army in northern Iraq and the no-fly zone. Right, they violated the no-fly zone. He said, no food for you, right? In keeping with the United States Security Council Resolution 661 of August 1990, Bush imposed additional restrictions for U.S. businesses conducting business with Iraq. So this is a great affirmative. I would run Iraq and Cuba on this topic. I'm certain of that. And actually, we have re-implemented food for oil, and I'll discuss that briefly as soon as I finish North Korea. And I'll get through North Korea quick. I know we're running out of time, and I'll try to have to stop yet. North Korea. Who knows the name of the North Korean government? What's the official name of Korea? That's right, you know? You don't know it, damn thing. Well, what is it? Yes, exactly. Democratic Republic of Korea. Actually, I'm sorry. It's the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. The DPRK. And South Korea is the ROK, the Republic of Korea. They have a huge population, 23 million. It's getting smaller all the time, not just because of sanctions. Well, because of sanctions, but they are experiencing a famine that is unprecedented in the annals of human history. It's estimated that one-third of their population is going to die in this famine. And guess what we're doing? Not a damn thing. Okay, we're standing by and watching them drop. Right? It's not Kim who's dropping either. Let's see. They also have a constitution, but they have a highly centralized communist state. Their economy, GNP is about $22.5 billion. Their per capita is about $1,000 a year. Their trade, their exports are about $1.95 billion. Their imports are about $2.85 billion. Their economy, well, it's in terrible shape. North Korea's faltering economy and the breakdown of trade relations with the countries of the former socialist bloc, right? Again, you see the trend, right? When the Soviet Union goes away, a lot of these countries are floundering. They're in bad shape because that's where they got their aid from. With the fall of communism, Pyongyang, which is the capital of North Korea, has faced massive difficult policy choices. Other centrally planned economies with similar difficulties have opted for domestic economic reform and liberalization of trade investment. North Korea, however, is still pumping money into a big military buildup, and I'll discuss that at the very end of this. Post-war division. Well, as you all may know, prior to World War II, it was pretty much colonized by the Japanese. It was just, they had a colonial administration set up, they concentrated all of the industrial developments there, and this is one of the little known facts of U.S., or not U.S. history, world history, is the extent of racism and the persecution of Koreans at the hand of Japanese during that colonial period, during World War II. It's really sickening to read some of these accounts. It makes a lot of other accounts that are more familiar to us pale in comparison. Korean people were really treated like crap by the Japanese. North and South both suffered from massive destruction caused during the Korean War, right? I skipped a little bit, but after the post-war, Japan no longer dominated, and that's when the Soviets and the U.S. started battling it out for sections of the globe, like, we want that. Well, we got South Korea, they got North Korea, we divided the country up. North and South Korea both suffered from massive destruction caused during the Korean War. Although it's never been declared a war, it's still called a police action. Right? I'm not sure what the defining line is, but a hell of a lot of people died over there. Bombs were dropped. I think it was a war, in my mind. Immediately after the war, North Korea mobilized its labor force and natural resources in an effort to achieve rapid economic development. Large amounts of aid from other communist countries, notably the Soviet Union and China, helped the regime achieve a high rate of growth in the post-war period. That doesn't exist anymore, obviously. North-South Korea, ties. Well, there ain't been many of them. They've tried many times. One reason or another, they usually broke down. We've done things recently, like signed the U.S. DPRK Greek framework, right, whereby they like, stop building nuclear weapons, things like that, we can offer some nuclear technology. This is the big thing we've been trying to pursue with North Korea. It's kind of on hold for a few reasons I'll get to in a moment. The government political condition, centralized government, under the rigid control of the Communist Korean Workers' Party, led by Kim Jong-il, which all government officials belong to the Communist Party. It's not like that in some countries. You're advised to belong to the Communist Party, but here you have to. Little is known about the actual lines of power and authority in the North Korean government. And most of the things we read are just, they're just really, they're the State Department speculation. on what goes on. We really don't know. And that bothers us, the fact that we don't know what's going on in this country really pisses us off. And that's one of the reasons we're trying to engage him right now. And I'll get to the idea of that in a moment about how we're trying to engage him. Let's see, foreign relations. North Korea's relations with the South and foreign relations post-World War II history. It still drives foreign policy. They want reunification. The question is how reunification is going to come about. There is a line of demarcation. Does anyone know where it exists at? There is parallel. Yes, all right. Oh, all the way. Sweet. It's a long question. All the way. Let's see. The U.S. is definitely pushing for peaceful reunification. Along with that is what's called DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone. It's also called the most dangerous place in the entire world, which I tend to believe is completely mined. It's bare, it's scarred, it's a wasteland. It's not nice. Let's see. So I'm going to skip. They have the fourth largest army in the world, by the way, so I would be worried if I was in this station. I'll talk about terrorism really quick, because that's the reason, one of the reasons they're sanctioned, okay? The DPRK is not known to have sponsored any terrorist acts since 1987 when we accused them when KAL-858 was bombed in flight. The DPRK has made several statements condemning terrorism. Most recently, a May 1994 ministry spokesman stated that they opposed any act encouraging and supporting terrorism. We don't believe them for some reason, right? We think we know better. We think they're definitely still up on terrorism, so they remain on our list. U.S. policy for North Korea. There's a few main things. One, we try to discourage, we're pushing peaceful reunification. The other main part of our policy towards them is denuclearization, okay? I'm convinced they have a nuclear weapon. That's my speculation and the things I've read. I do think they have a nuclear weapon. It's printed a few places, they haven't disclosed it. Maybe I could be wrong, and I really hope I'm wrong, but I think they have one. But we're trying to make sure they don't have it. Remember, because again, the only really ones who really know how to use nuclear weapons and take care of them are people who are white, right? Remember that all the time, okay? If you're not white, you really probably don't know what's up with the nuclear weapons. You're not trying to get one, okay? That'd be white, though, okay? So one thing we've done things like this agreed framework, right, where we agreed to send them things like light water reactors and send them better nuclear technologies in exchange for abandoning their nuclear programs. Most recently, they're engaged in high-level ballistic missile tests. They're developing ballistic missiles, and they're ready to use them, okay? One of the three requests about missiles, and that's the last thing I'm going to talk about, is Kido. Everyone's heard of Kido? Okay, Kido is going to be big when we talk about North Korea. It's the Korean Peninsula Energy Development Organization, Kido. It's part of the agreement for the light water reactors, okay, that I talked about a moment ago. Now, North Korea right now, again, frame this in the context of the ravaging famine. One-third of the population, again, expected to die. The U.S. should be sending huge amounts of food or not. The current North Korean sanctions may come down to the issues of ballistic missile development. We are willing right now, today, to lift all sanctions on food, medicine, and other supplies and trade restrictions to North Korea, provided they are willing to stop missile proliferation. 2 months ago, North Korea was really thinking about it, like, wow, the U.S. wants to constructively affect, and it was constructive engagement the U.S. proposed. They were like, wow, the U.S. wants to engage it. No, I think it's about time we did this. We want people reunification right on. But then the U.S. decided that we should go ahead and sink one of their gunboats in the Yellow Sea. Okay, we thought that would be a good way to start off a new relationship. So they decided they weren't interested anymore in our deal. They said, take all of your food and shut us. We are going to build our ballistic missiles. And that's what they've been doing. That's where North Korea is at right now. Syria and Iran, you know where they're at. I talked about the fact that tomorrow we're lifting all of those sanctions. But this loosening of the noose is only an effort to boost U.S. agricultural exports, like I said. I don't think real true change is going to come except in Syria, and that will be probably until the end of the summer. Again, Iraq, much like Korea, sanctions are ripping the social fabric of Iraq's diseases. It's disgusting what's going on there. Famine, disease, civil war, all being fueled by U.S. sanctions policy. So far, again, we've refused to eat back in the light of Iraq's non-cooperation on inspections. Last month, some relief was found in the U.S. Security Council voting unanimously, fortunately, the voice of reason, to extend the oil for food program. Just last month, They all increased the amount from $3.95 billion to $5.25 billion. So at least they're getting some food now, which is important. Also, just 2 weeks ago, Britain and the Netherlands came out and said, we want to start trading with Iraq. They're ready to do it. A lot of countries are. But the U.S. said, no, I don't think we're doing that. And, of course, they kowtowed to it like normal. Also recently, I think it was last week, India offered Iraq $25 billion in loans. The U.N. said, no, I don't think we're doing that, and they're not doing it. Cuba was the last one. We talked about Cuba extensively. I just want you to know, even in 99, despite the fact that we are lifting up two sanctions, the U.S. is still living in 1962. We still think there's a red menace, and we're still wanting to fight it for some god and unknown reason. But those sanctions, for the most part, are still in place. Don't be fooled if people say we've eased sanctions on Cuba. Right? It might be it's not a good news answer, okay? And it certainly doesn't mean the case has been solved, okay? Those were pandering. Those were pandering to liberal and moderate factions who want to lift sanctions, while at the same time maintaining the ability to pander to the right-wing, ultra-conservative portions of the Cuban-American community who have been dictating our foreign policy to Cuba for the last 30 years. That's where they still stand. They are treated like a pariah. Cuba's the best topic on the program, in my opinion. That's all I got for you. I know we ran over. I'm sorry. I hope you got a little something out of it.
There's some discussion of internet research, mostly database research like LexisNexis and ProQuest. This presentation that we're giving you, we've been working on in order to...